Hello, Michael McKenzie here. Sadly, parts of Australia have been making headlines for quite a while now because of drought. I'm sure you're aware. And yes, governments have offered assistance and various charities and individuals have been pitching in. But how can we build long-term resilience against drought? How do we talk about the future of farming in Australia? We're going to have a go at this right now. My two guests are farmer Anika Molesworth, who's a sustainable agriculture advocate and one of the founders of Farmers for Climate Change. And Anika, welcome to the program.
Hello.
Good to have you with us. And joining me too is Professor David Lindenmeyer. David is a landscape ecologist and conservation biologist at the Australian National University. David, welcome as well.
Hello.
David, I'm going to start with you, if I may. Talk about, if you wouldn't mind, the state of degradation of our landscape in this country. Where's it at and where's it going?
Well, I think it's important to put this into a global context. The most recent research in a global context indicates that roughly 2.9 billion hectares of the world's land surface is, and that's its arable land, is degraded. So to give people an idea of how much land that is, that's equivalent to both Russia and Canada combined. And that directly affects at least 3.2 billion people.
And when you say degraded, sorry to interrupt, but when you say degraded, does that mean it's incapable of producing food?
No, what it means is that its ability to be productive, to produce food and fibre, is impaired relative to what it should be or could be.
Right. Right.
So in an Australian context, we're dealing with about 300 million to perhaps 360 million hectares of our arable land, which has signs of degradation. So that might be soil erosion, salinity, problems with soil productivity, you know, the list goes on.
And David, I take it those figures you've quoted there for Australia, 300 million hectares, was around that before the latest drought?
That's correct. That was a study done in 2015. And it did a global assessment of the level of degradation. And those numbers have been updated in more recent studies just published in the last few months.
You've written that this current drought in many parts of the country is a critical decision point for the future of our agriculture. What do you mean by that?
What I mean is that yet again we're going through a major drought period. And yet again, there's kind of been a knee-jerk response. You know, yes, $5 billion announced by the federal government sounds great. But really what we're doing is addressing the symptoms and in many cases not the underlying causes. And many of the farmers that we've worked with for the last two decades are not the ones putting their hands up for drought relief because during the previous drought or even the droughts before that, they started to take action on their farms to invest in the natural assets to help build drought resilience and make them put them in a better position to deal with the challenges that they're dealing with now.
So due to the changes in land management they put in place on their own properties, they're not in that parlous state so many farmers face around the country at the moment where they desperately need financial and sometimes moral help.
That's right, yes. So what we've seen is, and we've researched this and we've monitored this for many years, is that many farmers have, for example, been reconstructing their farm dams so that they hold water for longer, the water quality is better, it's better outcomes for their livestock, and it's better quality water that stays on their properties for a lot longer. So it helps them deal with the conditions that they're dealing with now in a much better way, at the same time adding to their financial bottom line, as well as, quite interestingly, contributing to their mental health outcomes. Right. We're finding that farmers that invest in restoration projects on their land actually are in a better mental health state.
David, I want to come back to that because that sounds really interesting. But I also want to tease out what's happening with Anika, because Anika Molesworth, you work on your family's sheep station in Broken Hill in far western New South Wales. And 2 years ago, you helped found a group called Farmers for Climate Action. What's the group up to?
Yeah, Farmers for Climate Action is doing incredible work. So we're a group of farmers right across the country, across different agricultural industries, who have come together because we're seeing the impacts of climate change impacting our businesses, impacting our landscapes, impacting our communities. And we realize that business as usual is no longer an option, and we have to speak up and do something about this.
So you've already heard David allude to some of the measures that can be put in place with some of the farmers the ANUs work with. What have you been doing in your patch to ameliorate the kind of impacts of drought we're seeing right now?
Well, on my family farm, we run African sheep and goats. We have conservation reserves. We're wise water managers. We have renewable energies. Just like many farmers across the country, they're adapting to these changes. But what we're seeing is season after season, year after year, records are being smashed. So it's becoming increasingly challenging to continue farming in the ways that we have done. On my family farm, we are seeing the changes in that we have 800-year-old gum trees, which are now dying. We are recording 70-degree open ground temperatures in summer.
70-degree?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, when it becomes too hot for our African sheep and goats, when it becomes too dry for them, what's next? And we have to remember that climate change does not impact everyone and everywhere equally.
No.
So globally, you know, those with least capacity to adapt are generally the hardest hit. And agriculture in particular is right at the coalface of climate change.
So, Anika, you've changed your breed of sheep to African. And I take it that means they're much more resilient anyway in drier times because that's the continent they come from. What about cropping choices?
Yes, our African sheep, you know, they're drought hardy, they're very tolerant to high temperatures. But even in summer times, we're destocking majorly to reduce that pressure on the land and to look after our animal welfare. Agriculture in Australia, it is so diverse depending on where you are, what industry. So I guess everyone is adapting differently and implementing different technologies, practices.
Anika, sorry to interrupt, but you were, I think, advocating too maybe farmers looking for secondary income from renewable energy.
Well, that's right. Renewable energy projects can provide farmers with secondary and stable sources of income. Australia is the sunniest continent on earth and one of the windiest. So the opportunities for renewable energies in rural Australia are fantastic. So farmers are jumping on board with this. Rural communities are wanting to jump on board with this. So we have to make this more accessible for these people.
We've often been seen as a wheat and canola and cotton country when it comes to cropping. Is it time to rethink those kinds of crops?
Look, those crops will be playing a part in parts of Australia for a long time. And Australian farmers are incredible. They're adaptive. They are innovative. And the grains guys, the cotton guys, they are doing incredible work with genetics, engineering, robotics, and they are being incredibly resource use efficient. But I guess why we're hearing this, this louder voice coming from rural Australia at the moment is because the changes that we're seeing in the climate and to our businesses are occurring so rapidly that we need greater support. We can't operate in silos anymore. We need, you know, smart, innovative people from all sectors, right up to the policymakers, getting involved with these challenges so we can seize those opportunities that are out there.
David Lindemeyer, earlier you mentioned that simply changing the way you store water on your property, making those dams more efficient, more retentive of the water that they do collect is one way of doing things. What else have you been helping farmers in, I think some of the test properties you're working with, do better when it comes to, sustainability, but also better profits and biodiversity?
So yeah, one of the other projects, in addition to the farm dams work, has been looking at shelter belts.
Right.
So areas of tree lanes, how wide they should be, where they should be located, what attributes they should have. And there's no doubt that there's a really exciting set of opportunities here to reconfigure the vegetation, the native vegetation on farms, so that you can better protect livestock. You know, you can get better lambing success if you design your shelter belts the right way. And you can think of all those Angus cattle out there that are black, that are going to be baking in these incredibly hot temperatures. It's really important that they have appropriate levels of shade for animal welfare reasons, but also
I guess foil overcoats for Angus cattle is less economic than maybe just having trees around the edge of the property for shade, yeah?
Well, that's right. If what happens is that cattle have to drink less because they're cooler,
right,
and that adds to their weight gain, and it also helps protect your pastures better. So there are some true win-win-win outcomes. You can get a win for biodiversity by designing your shelter belts in a good way. You can get a win for productivity. And in many cases, this kinds of remodelling of the native vegetation leads to immense farmer satisfaction, and some of the work in our sustainable farms projects indicating that these have very positive benefits for farmer mental health. So this is really important in terms of rethinking how to deal with the challenges that are facing farmers on a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, decade-based basis.
Well, David, I think you just mentioned this in passing, but hasn't the ANU just last month launched the Sustainable Farms Project?
We have. It's a really exciting initiative, basically looking at those three pillars. How do we get ecological restoration, farm productivity, farm profitability, and farmer mental health together and look at the intersections of those really key areas as we think about what Australia is going to look like in the future in terms of where its farming's at. So we have several private foundations and other organisations that are behind us to capitalise on our last 20 years of detailed long-term monitoring right across eastern Australia.
So making dams more efficient, planting shelter belts, increasing biodiversity, it doesn't sound, if you don't mind me saying, like rocket science. Why hasn't it been happening on a nationwide basis before now?
That's a good question, and that's actually going to be one of the research questions looking at what influences the uptake of new ideas, what influences the adoption on the ground. You know, why are some farmers never going to change, doesn't matter what you say? Mm. Why do some farmers lead the changes that are happening, just like we've heard Annika talking about? And then how do we influence those in the middle, the substantial number of farmers in the middle? And we've started a whole series of demonstration farm days where we get farmers to talk to other farmers about how they've tackled problems with salinity or productivity or soil health, all those kinds of things, as one way of starting to think about how we communicate these ideas so that they've got faster adoption and wider adoption and better adoption.
Annika, can I come back to you as the next generation of farmers who are obviously in your patch anyway and with your group, very sensitive to some of the variables and impacts and pressures of climate change and long-term intense droughts like we're going through at the moment. Are you sensing that more and more farmers of your generation are now thinking, maybe this isn't the life for me anymore, I need to get out?
Farming is incredibly challenging, and I do think that young people do think, gosh, you know, do I want to take that on? But those involved with this industry, they are making a meaningful contribution to food security, to the protection of natural habitats and wildlife, to the vibrancy of rural communities. And young people come to agriculture with these creative, critical minds. And they've grown up with technologies like computers and smartphones, and they communicate daily with their peers around the world. So I think it's so important that we give these young people in agriculture the platforms to help shape this industry, because they do have a truly vested interest in designing sustainable food and fibre production systems.
Well, what I'm getting from both of you is that things can't stay the way they have been, but there is room for change, and where there's room for change, there's room for hope, and that's great. So Professor David Lindenmeyer, landscape ecologist at ANU, and Annika Molesworth, a farmer and one of the founders of Farmers for Climate Action, thank you both very much indeed for taking the time here on Life Matters.
Thank you.
Thank you.